I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. The ocean-oriented theme park SeaWorld is searching for a new identity. The Orlando park was badly shaken in 2010 when one of its orcas killed trainer Don Brancho in front of spectators leaving a show. Later this spring, SeaWorld Orlando is planning to open two new attractions, a third set for 2013, considered to be the theme park's largest expansion in its 38-year history. None of the new attractions center on Shamu, that's the legacy orca which has been the whale face of SeaWorld and its 10 theme and water parks nationwide. We'll hear from an award-winning journalist on the book Death at SeaWorld, due out in July, and also from an expert panel including a former SeaWorld trainer. It's a look at SeaWorld and the future of the park ahead on Intersection. I'm joined by David Kirby, an award-winning journalist. His book Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity is due out in July. Kirby joins us from his home in Brooklyn. Welcome.
Thank you, Mark. How are you?
Very good, thanks. And I do also want to mention that we asked SeaWorld to participate in this program, and they declined our request. Trainer Don Brancho drowned in February 2010 when the orca Tillicum pulled her underwater by her ponytail. And this was after a Dinner with Shamu show. David, how many people saw this?
There were probably about 10 park guests in the stadium area where this happened. Maybe another dozen staff members when it happened. I think I should also note that there is some dispute whether Tillicum pulled Don in by the ponytail or another part of her body. There was conflicting testimony at the OSHA trial last year over that particular point. But he did pull her into the water, into the deeper part of the pool.
And what was she doing when this happened?
She was lying down in a very shallow area, a ledge, maybe 6 inches of water, and she was having what is called a relationship session with Tillicum after a show. It wasn't the big Shamu show. It's a much more intimate event called Dine with Shamu. People have lunch or dinner on this terrace alongside a special pool, a G-pool, and they show the guests some of the things that the animals can do and how they do husbandry, how they treat the animals and train them. And at the end, when people were leaving, Don got into this ledge and was basically rubbing Tillicum and very up close and intimate with him. That was a normal thing to do. She did it many, many times. Lots of trainers had done that. And on this particular day, he grabbed her and pulled her into the deeper water.
And so what happened then? What did trainers around her do? What was the reaction?
Well, there's some dispute over that, too. There's different witnesses who have reported different things, but the official account is that a trainer named Jan Topolesky ran and hit the alarm, and then he ran down to the water to try to distract Tillicum. These whales are trained to return to stage in this kind of event, or whenever they sort of go off control, you try to recall them to the stage and put them back into control. Tillicum was having none of it. He had Don in his mouth at this point, her entire body. He sort of did a barrel roll and brought her down to the bottom of the pool and began sort of batting her about in the water like a toy. And she was, of course, screaming and crying for her life. By all accounts, it was an absolutely horrible scene. And he dunked her a couple times. She escaped at least once. She surfaced, cried for help, and he grabbed her again. And at one point, she went lifeless and her body floated to the surface. And what really struck me was even after apparently she was dead, he went down to the end of the pool, he turned around and he gained speed and he rammed her one more time. So that tells you he wasn't just playing. I mean, something was going on that day. He kind of flipped out.
And so what were trainers able to do, if anything, to try and stop the whale as this was going on?
There was nothing they could do. This is a 12,000-pound whale, a top predator. If a whale decides it wants to keep a human body as a toy or a trophy or just doesn't want to give it up, there's very little that you can do. Many people came running to the stadium. The process, the procedure in this case, was to unfurl nets into the pool, to use callback tones, to try to distract the whale, to try to call him to the stage with fish with underwater tones, with hand signals, by slapping the water. Obviously, none of those things worked. Then they tried to deploy these nets to corral him into, they have a medical pool where the false bottom could lift up and basically beach the whale. But it took them probably 20 minutes to corral Tillicum into that pool. By that time, Don, unfortunately, had died. And even after they beached him, it took another 10 minutes or more to pry open his mouth so they could retrieve her body.
And to what degree has your research uncovered the level of training that was in place for trainers in the event of this type of situation?
There was a huge discussion of the level of training for trainers during the OSHA hearing in Orlando. I attended both sessions of that hearing. They lasted for 2 weeks total. And I was actually fairly impressed with the range of training that SeaWorld does with the way that they do try to record the incidents and try to make staff members aware of past incidents with past animals. Now, OSHA picked hold in that, and things would get into one book, but maybe not into another. OSHA tried to make the case fairly effectively that the trainers weren't getting all the information they need. But there is a pretty extensive review system. There's a behavior review system. In order to perform particular tasks with particular whales, you have to be qualified and experienced, and you have to pass a large number of tests, and those tests are given every year. So there is a lot that SeaWorld has done over the years, and I think that's their argument, that things have gotten safer over time. The problem is just one safety lapse and someone can end up dead. And that's why I think OSHA is concerned.
And that's, of course, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Well, talk to me a little bit about Tillicum, SeaWorld's largest whale. This is not the first time he's been involved in the death of a human. He actually was involved in two other human deaths. So how does he compare with other SeaWorld whales? And tell us a little bit about his personal history.
Sure. He has a long, strange, and kind of sad history. And I think it's important to note that Tillicum is not the only SeaWorld killer whale that has attacked or even killed a trainer. Several of the whales have attacked trainers, and their whale Quito, who lives in Spain, killed a trainer over there. And, of course, in Tillicum's first attack, it involved two other whales, Hyeta and Nuka, who also ended up being owned by SeaWorld. Tillicum was born in Iceland. He was captured when he was about 2 years old. He eventually was sent to Canada, to Victoria in British Columbia. He lived in a marine park there with those two whales I mentioned, Hyeta and Nuka. And Orca society is female-dominated, so these older females really beat the living daylights out of this kid. He probably missed his mother. They're very attached. In some whale populations, the orcas, the males, stay with their mothers for life. And he was removed at a very young age, then put in a tank with these females he tried to bond with. They basically raked him with their teeth and were very aggressive with him. He had nowhere to flee. He had nowhere to go. And then he ended up pulling a trainer into the water up in Canada. Her foot dipped into the water, and before she could get out, he grabbed her, and all three whales proceeded to drown her, mostly Tillicum, from the witnesses that I interviewed. That park decided they didn't want to have anything to do with killer whales anymore. The city of Victoria wanted to get rid of the killer whales. But who's going to buy three whales that have already killed somebody? Well, SeaWorld was first in line, and they bought all three whales.
So the primary reason that SeaWorld wanted a whale like Tillicum was to be a stud.
I don't know if that was the primary reason, but yes, they needed breeding males for a long time. Tillicum has been their only breeding male. He now has, I think, probably 12 offspring, a few more if you count some that died. He is a prolific breeder. Now I think the issue with Tillicum is that they have an possible inbreeding problem. So many of the SeaWorld whales now, second and third generation, are related to Tillicum that they need new semen. They need new DNA in the mix. They did just get a young male back from Canada that was on loan up in Ontario. He has returned to Orlando. But Tillicom, as I was about to mention, did kill another person in 1999, and then he killed Don in 2010.
So why does SeaWorld hold on to a whale like Tillicom that has such an aggressive past?
You know, that's a really good question. One is because he's their whale, and he performs, and he is a source of semen for their breeding program. I do believe they are attached to their animals. They don't want to just give them up. Where would he go? Who would take him? However, I would point out that, and I think we're going to talk about the OSHA citation, but OSHA basically said two things. The first one was about Tillicom specifically and how he was so dangerous and how you really couldn't do work around him without barriers. And I started thinking, well, what if SeaWorld were to agree that Tillicom might retire to a sea pen somewhere? And I report in the book that there have been rumors, there's talk that the government of Iceland might be willing to take Tillicom back. There are people who have apparently come up with money to put him in a sea pen up there. Now, this is total speculation and hearsay, but when you think about it, it would make a certain amount of sense for SeaWorld. First of all, they get rid of their quote-unquote Tillicom problem. They take care of that OSHA. That part of the citation is gone and done with, and they get a lot of well-deserved PR points for doing the right thing and allowing this show business animal, who's been performing virtually his entire life, to go retire possibly back in Iceland. Now, he might need a companion, and there's talk of other whales that might be eligible for retirement as well. But when you think about it, it would save SeaWorld a lot of grief, a lot of money, they could win some real points for it. I don't know if it's going to happen. But it would solve some problems for them.
We're talking with David Kirby, author of the book Death at SeaWorld, which is due out in July. David, we've mentioned just a little bit about the OSHA hearings that have been going on here in Orlando. What is the potential impact of those hearings, and what is the status of those rulings on how trainers will interact with whales in the future?
Sure. Well, OSHA hit SeaWorld with a willful violation in Don's death, and they issued two parts. One was Tillicom, and one was all the other whales at SeaWorld, and they issued what were called basically feasible abatements, or these are things that SeaWorld needs to do if they want to continue performing these shows. Whether the trainers get in the water or not, there's various things that SeaWorld is supposed to do, including things like a spare air system where trainers actually have oxygen on them, almost like a frogman, a Navy frogman system, false bottom pools, which they're now installing in that pool where Don was killed. They've put in these giant airbags that will quickly lift the bottom. So SeaWorld is trying to comply. SeaWorld doesn't have to comply right now because they are appealing the decision, and they want to overturn the decision and the citation regardless. But it looks like if they are unable to do that, they are going to try to comply with these abatements by putting in these extra technological safety features. Now, a lot of people said that they're not going to work, and none of these things would have saved Don and other trainers who have been attacked. But SeaWorld is investing a lot of money, which tells me they want to put trainers back in the water. That probably won't happen until this court case is resolved, and that's going to be a while longer.
I've been speaking with journalist David Kirby. His book, Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity, is due out in July. David, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Ahead, an expert panel discusses SeaWorld's business model and the welfare of its whales. I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection on 90.7. To help us look closer into the world of animal trainers at SeaWorld, I'm joined by John Jett, a former SeaWorld trainer and adjunct professor in environmental science at Stetson University. John, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And we are also trying to understand from a business perspective where SeaWorld is heading. And to get that view, we're joined by Mark Johnston, who is professor in marketing and ethics at Rollins College. Mark, good to see you.
Thank you.
So we also asked SeaWorld Orlando to participate in this discussion. We do want to point out they declined our request. John Jett, you worked at SeaWorld as a trainer between 1992 and 1996. What was the culture among trainers at that time?
Well, it does take a while to acclimate to a training environment. It's sort of an on-the-job training. It does take a while before you're able to get in the water with the animals and do show water work. And safety was, as it probably is now, always of concern. Safety, though, was usually left to the discretion of the trainers, or and very few managers were ever on site. So training, I would say, took place in an environment where safety was a concern, but it was not overt. It was not in your face. It was just try to act safely. There were rules and regulations apparently on the books. I knew very little about the rules and regulations that were on the books. I just kind of went along, and when something was amiss, somebody, perhaps a senior trainer, would mention, hey, watch that whale, watch this whale. He's acting a little goofy. But other than that, the rules seem mostly not very apparent, certainly not in your face.
And so you were working with killer whales at SeaWorld. What would you say was your own impression, your own feeling at a personal level? Did you feel safe with those animals?
Well, you know, it again, go back to the culture question. It's a culture of sort of like being a professional athlete, where you don't want to show fear because there's a long line of people behind you that want to do just your job, and management never let us forget that. And so was I scared from time to time? Of course. First few times I got in the water with one of the animals, it was a very intimidating experience for me. I was never really all that comfortable with it. Interestingly, one of the animals I was most comfortable with was Tillicum, who has now killed a number of folks, including, unfortunately, Don Brandschau. Yeah, they're pretty intimidating animals, but you kind of, the culture indicates that you suck it up and you move forward and you don't show fear. And if you're injured, if you have sore feet, bad knees, you get banged up, you show up to work the next day and do your job.
So you actually knew Tillicum, the whale. Did you know about his prior past of having killed other people?
Well, it's an interesting question, and unfortunately, I really didn't. Certainly, I didn't know about the details. Now, when I was working with Tillicum, at that point, he had only killed one person, Kelty Barron in Canada. So Tillicum came to SeaWorld of Florida while I was there after having just killed Kelty, and we were presented Tillicum in just very vague terms. Don't get in the water with him. Only senior trainers are going to work with him. And the details of her death, as far as him being a very active participant in her death, which now the records clearly indicate that, they were never conveyed to us, which now, in retrospect, is pretty disturbing to me, that we were never given the details about his behavior and his participation in her death. In fact, there were a lot of accidents and incidents that occurred in other parks that we just weren't privy to the details as trainers.
Are you talking about SeaWorld parks?
I am talking about SeaWorld parks. And so these accidents would happen, incidents would happen. I remember one time something happened in another park. I don't even know what the incident was. And we were forced to be out of the water for a couple of weeks. And to this day, I don't even know why that was. But it's, again, kind of disturbing how little we knew about what was going on.
You're an adjunct professor in environmental science at Stetson University now. What would you say has been your impression on the way containment and being in captivity affects large mammals like killer whales?
Well, you know, we have a long history now, a long track record of this experiment of keeping orcas in captivity in tiny concrete enclosures, and the evidence strongly suggests it just doesn't work. They live dramatically shorter lives than their wild counterparts. They have collapsed dorsal fins, unlike their wild counterparts. They have teeth that are broken and worn down, and SeaWorld's involved with this barbaric thing of drilling their teeth out with a variable speed drill and then having to flush those teeth out. The procedure is called a pulpotomy, which leads to systemic infection in the animals, and so they're chronically on medication. Tillicum, for example, was on antibiotics and antifungals when he killed Don, and the animals are very regularly given medication for a variety of problems. So there's all these very systemic problems associated with the captive environment. One thing we have found out is that captivity just doesn't work for them. And I've been the first to applaud places like SeaWorld for some of the early basic research that went on. There's no research going on now. There wasn't really when I was there. And so I think the evidence suggests that this experiment really has been quite a failure.
It's been safe to say the general consensus about releasing captive killer whales into the wild is not the best idea. You run into what we might call the Free Willy scenario. That was where the whale Keiko, which was the star of that movie Free Willy, about a killer whale that was set back into the wild after being in captivity, it didn't end well. The whale Keiko never really acclimated to the wild.
Well, that's not really true. Keiko swam a 1,000-mile journey, and Keiko was catching his own food, and he was socializing somewhat with other animals, with other killer whales. So to say he was a failure, I don't know, is totally fair. Keiko did die, as do a lot of captive animals die prematurely. Perhaps he had an immune system that was weakened from his years of captivity. It's hard to know. But with respect to the animals that I was most familiar with at SeaWorld, they are, in fact, on average, very poor candidates for release back to the wild without ongoing human intervention. Their teeth are in very, very bad shape. They have to be flushed with antiseptic solution every day. And to not do that would mean that before too long, I can imagine in a matter of weeks, certainly months, they would become infected and would die from antibiotic administration.
I want to bring Mark Johnston into the conversation. It's interesting hearing John's description of the level of treatment of the whales at a park like SeaWorld. I mean, hearing that sort of level of care for the animals there, is it looking at the business model safe to say that doesn't sound sustainable?
Well, certainly when you balance what the public sees in the shows and so forth against what's happening in the back, some of those details would be unpleasant for the people at the park. But you know, the reality is that the people are going there to experience these animals up close when they would not normally be able to. So, from the participants' perspective, certainly there's a lot there to be concerned about. But the reality is that they are experiencing the animals up close, and historically that's been a business model that has worked.
A sense of awe and wonder.
Absolutely, yes. The experience of the animals up close.
How do you think that, in general, businesses that use animals in captivity are faring here in the 21st century? Is this an idea ethically that is losing favor?
Well, you certainly have a lot of groups that are more concerned about the animals, much as we're hearing about here. The challenge, of course, for all these businesses is that there is an interest in the public for experiencing these animals up close. And for most people, there would be no other way for them to experience the animals. So there is always a challenge in terms of trying to not only satisfy a need for people to see the animals, but also in the case of taking care of them, but also hopefully educating people about the animals. So raising awareness of the animals in general.
Do you think, John Jett, there is a positive side, as Mark was describing, the awareness that is raised by simply seeing the animal and observing it in that environment?
Well, I can imagine that, to be fair, that there is some advantage to seeing a killer whale in a concrete pool. You know, I think there's also the risk that we run of walking away from a place like that with this idea that they're here, they must be doing okay in the wild. It also shows guests that, you know, we have sort of dominion over the planet and we're the supreme rulers. I certainly don't want my little girl to see the planet that way and to see animals. So, you know, I think early on there was some benefit to it, especially from just basic orca research that went on. We learned how long their gestation was. We learned, you know, what they weigh and what their blood types were. And we learned a lot of things that we really didn't know beforehand. But if you look through the professional literature, nothing's being written now about orcas in captivity. There's virtually no research going on. There was virtually no research going on when I was there. So, I think that the risks certainly outweigh the benefits or any possible benefits that may accrue from having animals in captivity. I might also add that, you know, the Monterey Bay Aquarium is one of the most visited places on the planet in terms of marine parks, and they made a decision early on not to house cetaceans, and their numbers just keep increasing year after year with no calls for whales and dolphins in pools. So I think there is a business model that works that is contrary to SeaWorld's.
Mark Johnson, this spring, SeaWorld plans to open two new attractions, Turtle Trek Centers on manatees and sea turtles, Freshwater Oasis, a new addition to Discovery Cove, and there's also in the works plans to open a third large new attraction next year on Antarctica. None of these attractions, though, focusing on Shamu, which is the legacy icon of SeaWorld, that orca Shamu. So are we seeing the institution move away from the killer whale as an icon after the death of Don Branshaw?
I think we saw SeaWorld move away from the Shamu icon even before what happened. Certainly you can go and look at Discovery Cove and Aquatica and growth inside the park in terms of some of the rides and movement away from that kind of icon imagery related to Shamu. And I think when you go to the website and you look at their marketing communications, you can definitely see a concerted effort to move beyond Shamu to really rebranding the experience in a different way.
What do you think in terms of a precedent? Are there other instances where maybe a brand icon has become actually damaging for a business? And would you say is that what's happening?
Well, I think there certainly is inside SeaWorld the reaction to what happened and kind of the overall awareness of holding orcas in captivity has created a concern to move away from some of the traditional branding that they've used. But beyond that, you know, SeaWorld is looking to always stay current, to create new brands that would be popular with the market. And I think what they're doing is not inconsistent with, Disney or other organizations that are looking to create new popular brands.
SeaWorld in 2011 generated record levels of revenue. So does that show that the park really doesn't need? And we should point out that the trainers were not allowed back in the water with the whales. So does that show that this type of model that they've been using in the past really not necessary?
Well, I think what it shows is that people come to SeaWorld for a lot of different reasons. And one of the reasons historically they have come is to watch the orcas in the show. But there are a lot of other reasons to go. And I think that the popularity of the park in this last year, particularly in the months immediately following the tragedy, speaks to the fact that a lot of people want to go and experience all the other things that happen at SeaWorld beyond what happens in the orca tank.
I've been speaking with Mark Johnston, professor in marketing and ethics at Rollins College. We also spoke with John Jett, former SeaWorld trainer and adjunct professor in environmental science at Stetson University. Gentlemen, thank you so much both for coming in.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can always sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.